All right. So the question is, Lenin's theory of the Vanguard Party still relevant today? And I think that it's necessary in order to answer this question to first unpack exactly what was Lenin's theory of the Vanguard Party, as it has, I think, a good claim to being the single most distorted part of the Marxist tradition. And mostly because that distortion kind of comes from all sides. You know, the Cold War historians who wanted to show that the roots of Soviet tyranny lay in Lenin's conception of the party, to those on the left today who reject what they see as the Bolsheviks' hierarchical and elitist organisational methods. Both of these angles were, of course, greatly boosted by the Soviet historians and the organisational methods of the communist parties around the world. And it's easy to criticise the old communist parties for their monolithic structures and their unquestioning adherence to the party line. But actually, they were the antithesis of Lenin's conception of the party. They were the product of the degeneration of the revolution that Lenin and the Bolsheviks led, not a product of its success. So before I begin the talk, I just wanted to make one small caveat. The question that I've been given was about Lenin's theory of the party. And I think part of the distortion of Lenin's legacy is that the idea that the perfect form of the Bolshevik party sprang fully formed out of the head of Lenin, codified in the pamphlet What Is to Be Done. And I think some of the recent scholarship has revealed instead that Lenin's debt to the orthodoxy of the time, that neither Lenin nor most of his critics really thought that he was a maverick on the question of the party. Indeed, when you look at the early memorials to Lenin, his contribution to the party question is rarely mentioned out of all of the things that was celebrated for. So when I talk about Lenin's theory and practice of the party, I'm not really just talking about him, but his collaborators in the Bolsheviks and, to a certain extent, those in the social democracy before the First World War. Still, I'm happy to just talk about Lenin's concept of the Vanguard Party with the previous caveat, because throughout his political career, Lenin obviously did have a lot to say about organisation, and the organisation that he led, I believe, most closely resembles a model Vanguard Party. So the first question then is, what do we mean and what did Lenin mean by the Vanguard Party? And by definition, a vanguard is means a group of people who are at the forefront and leading another group of people. The concept of a vanguard party is one that is made up of the most class-conscious workers, those who accept the Marxist ideology and are involved in some sort of activity around the party. They are distinct from the rest of the workers because of this higher level of consciousness and activity. Now, as I said, Lenin wasn't the first Marxist to conceive of the party as a vanguard of the working class. And indeed, you can go back to the words of the Communist Manifesto to see Marx and Engels talking about the communists being the most resolute and forward-thinking section of the workers' movement. It was also the position of the Second International long before Lenin wrote his retrospectively infamous pamphlet, What Is to Be Done. It was the German Social Democratic Party that the Russian Marxists looked to as a model to emulate, and to that party's theoretical leader, Karl Kautsky, to whom they owed most of their ideas about what the party should be. And again, I just wanted to have a side note, a brief word on terminology, because in the period before the First World War, the main international grouping of Marxist organisations was the Second International. The largest party by far within that was the German SPD. Most Marxist and Marxist groups called themselves social democrats, a term that held until the war and then the Russian Revolution drove a wedge between the moderate organisations of the Second International, still called social democrats, and the radical wing led by the Bolsheviks, also called communists. So pre-1914, when we talk about social democrats or social democracy, we essentially mean Marxists and Marxism. So Kautsky saw that there were varying levels of consciousness within what we broadly call the working class. He wrote, "From skilled and unskilled proletarians, there gradually forms the stratum of the working class that finds itself in movement. That is, that there are some sections of the working class who are more active than others and more aware or conscious of their interests. It is out of that stratum that social democrats emerge." And a contemporary description of the working class membership of the German SPD, I think, gives a good sense of what was meant by a social democratic worker, a member of the vanguard of the working class. And the description says that they were that type of working men one too rarely sees outside of Germany. They were serious-minded, ruddy-faced and muscular. And here I'm not suggesting that being ruddy-faced or muscular is an essential part of being a feature of the vanguard. One could see that they saved from the exploitation of the factory enough physical and mental strength to live like men during their leisure hours, and my belief is that physically and mentally they can hold their own in the essentials with any other class in Germany. And because this section is more conscious and active, it can play a role in pushing forward other sections of the working class. And in an article written about the 1905 revolution called Strike Statistics in Russia, Lenin showed this process at work. He looked at the fact that it was the metal workers of St. Petersburg who were responsible for pulling the rest of the working class in Russia into the great strike wave. They lost three times as much in wages as the next most active section of industry, and it was their audacious slogans and activity that gave the rest of the working class the impetus and courage to join that strike wave. Lenin argued that these advanced workers should be organised into a party in order to give them more cohesion and an even greater opportunity to influence others. And in 1913 he wrote, "The party is the politically conscious advanced section of the class. It is the vanguard. The political consciousness of the advanced contingent is manifested in its ability to organise. By organising, it achieves unity of will, and this united will of an advanced thousand, hundred thousand, million becomes the will of the class." So for Lenin, the purpose of organising the most advanced section of the class is not to stand over it in scorn, to separate from it, but precisely to be in a better position to influence, to help develop consciousness among broader layers of the class. Now, Lenin stressed that the membership of the party should only be made up of this vanguard. He made this distinction in his arguments with the Mensheviks, or some of the Mensheviks who, by contrast, argued such propositions as that every striker is a social democrat. And to quote again from the articles that Lenin wrote following the split with the Mensheviks in 1903, an article called One Step Forward, Two Steps Back, he wrote, "The stronger our party organisations, consisting of real social democrats, the less wavering and instability there is within the party. The broader, more varied, richer and more fruitful will be the party's influence on the elements of the working class masses surrounding it and guided by it. The party, as the vanguard of the working class, must not be confused, after all, with the entire class. To forget the distinction between the vanguard and the whole of the masses gravitating towards it, to forget the vanguard's constant duty of raising ever wider sections to its own advanced level, means simply to deceive oneself, to shut one's eyes to the immensity of our tasks and to narrow down those tasks." And I quote this at length to show that Lenin clearly stated time and time again that he wanted to organise a distinct section of the working class only so that he could better influence, or they could better influence, the rest of that class, so that they could inspire the rest of the class to revolutionary consciousness and activity. Now, as you may be aware, there are some objections that have been raised against this argument. So even for those who do argue that it is necessary to organise the most advanced sections of the working class, will argue against the caricature of the Leninist model of the party. And this is usually backed up by the textbook commentary on Lenin's pamphlet, What is to be Done. So the first objection then is that Lenin advocated a highly centralised and disciplined party, and well, that's actually correct. But his prescriptions, I think, have been characterised or caricatured way beyond recognition, because the organisational formulas in What is to be Done and other pamphlets are quite simply a reflection and a response to reality, that it was impossible to organise a fully democratic, open party under the watchful eye of the political police. Or, as Lenin said, "Under conditions of political freedom, our party will be built entirely on the elective principle. Under the autocracy, this is impractical because for the collective thousands of workers that make up the party." And if we look briefly at the supposed advocacy of a conspiratorial party in What Is to Be Done, Lars Lee is the author of What Is to Be Done in Context, who was speaking in the last session, so it shows a better translation of conspiracy or secret as it's translated from What Is to Be Done. And he talks about the Russian transliteration konspiratsiya, which he suggests is best retranslated just back into the fine art of not getting arrested, which obviously means that revolutionaries just had to be trained and professional and to avoid the secret police. So Lenin makes clear over and over again that the need for this conspiratsiya is because he's determined to try to build as large a revolutionary organisation as is possible within the autocracy. And what worker is going to join a party that can't even keep its activists safe from arrest? Lenin was arguing for this so-called conspiratorial form of organisation because he, actually, unlike many of his opponents at the time, was convinced that the Russian working class would welcome the social democratic and their messages, and he wanted the best organised and the safest way to reach them. Besides, if Lenin's conception of the party was seriously that it was to remain a conspiratorial circle, then why did he place such emphasis on the need to fight for political freedoms that would allow more open and democratic workers' organisations? And in 1896, he wrote, "As a living being needs air, so we need political freedom. Without achieving freedom of strikes, assembly, union, speech, press, without achieving the right to take part in the administration of the country or in making its laws, we will never cast off the chains of economic slavery that oppress us. That is why the struggle with the autocratic government for political freedom is the most urgent task of the Russian worker movement." And finally, on that objection, a look at the actual makeup of the Bolshevik Party at precisely those moments when political freedom had been won, and that is in Russia during the 1905 and 1917 revolutions, makes a mockery of the claim that Lenin wanted only, you know, hand-picked professional revolutionaries willing to toe the party line. In 1968, a study by David Lane comparing the composition of the Mensheviks with the Bolsheviks found that the Bolshevik elite was on average 45 years old, which was 15 years older than the local leaders, whereas the top Bolsheviks average age were 34, and so they were only 7 years older than the local leaders. And his conclusion was that unlike the Menshevik organisational structure, the Bolsheviks were more open. The young Bolsheviks were able to advance rapidly to positions of authority. Or, you know, just to have a look at the Bolshevik Party in late 1917, encompassing nearly a quarter of a million class-conscious workers and soldiers from all over Russia. So democracy within the Vanguard Party is not simply a moral question, but a strategic imperative. For unity in action to be able to occur, space must be allowed for proper debate. And what is the use of a mute vanguard if indeed it isn't just an oxymoron? And Lenin writes, "The proletariat does not recognise unity of action without freedom to discuss and criticise. There can be no mass party, no party of a class, without full clarity of essential shadings, without an open struggle between various tendencies, without informing the masses as to which leaders and which organisations of the party are pursuing this or that line. Without this, a party worthy of the name cannot be built." So for Lenin, internal party democracy, when allowed by circumstances, was an absolutely essential part of the Vanguard Party. Okay. There's another charge that's held at Lenin and his conception of the party, and that is one of elitism. I think the most basic of these is just the very idea that organising a vanguard is elite. Because it's a recognition of the different levels of consciousness within the working class. But to be honest, I hardly think that a recognition of reality is elitist. You know, for instance, it's not elitist to say, to recognise that the Petersburg metal workers played a leading role in the 1905 revolution. Besides, as I went over before, Lenin's conception of the party is not just that these differences should remain static, but precisely that consciousness could change and should change, that the vanguard would be an increasing section of the working class, and that the best way of ensuring that it would increase is precisely to organise those people who already wanted to participate in that change. But another disagreement, mostly from the sort of more left-wing critiques of so-called Leninism, is based on Lenin's formulations about consciousness and spontaneity in what is to be done. That is that socialist consciousness comes only from outside the working class, and that the role of the revolutionary party is to divert the spontaneous development of the working class. Now, the formulations that Lenin used in What Is To Be Done stem from the basic social democratic tenets of the time, that social democracy, particularly as it existed in Germany, represented the merger of the working class movement with socialism. Now, they meant by this that socialism was established by semi-bourgeois intellectuals like Marx and Engels, and most of the leaders of the Russian Marxism and the German SPD come from petty bourgeois or intelligentsia layers. So that's historical fact, but I don't think it could be left at that, and Lenin usually didn't just leave it there, because the worker movement needs the merger also. For a workers' movement to remain apart from socialism inevitably means that it will come under the sway of bourgeois ideology. Because, as the famous quote goes, the ruling ideas of any epoch are the ideas of the ruling class. The bourgeoisie has infinitely more means by which to disseminate ideas that justify and suit it than does the workers' movement. As Lenin wrote in What Is To Be Done, there is much talk of spontaneity, but the spontaneous development of the working class movement leads to its subordination to bourgeois ideology. The spontaneous working class movement is trade unionism, and trade unionism means the ideological enslavement of the workers by the bourgeoisie. And to back up these views, Lenin pointed to the experience of the English working class, which was very well organised in trade unions, yet was, you know, one of the most politically docile in Europe. Its leaders spurned revolution and embraced the liberal bourgeoisie, dragging the consciousness of the working class into the open arms of bourgeois ideologists. And even today, you know, I don't think that anyone can look at that product of the elemental workers' movement, the Australian Labor Party, and not see its ideological enslavement by the bourgeoisie. This is so this is essentially what Lenin meant by diverting the course from spontaneous or elemental trade unionism. It was not enough for the working class to simply fight for limited economic demands. To do so left the political field open to the bourgeoisie, and it means that the vanguard are only fighting for their narrow self-interests, whereas they must fight for the democratic demands of the whole of the oppressed classes if they are to challenge the power of the bourgeoisie. Thus, as Lenin writes, the ideal social democrat is not the trade union secretary, but the tribune of the people, who is able to react to every manifestation of tyranny and oppression, no matter where it appears, no matter what stratum or class it affects. And finally, to flesh out that point, I think it's actually worth going back to something that Kautsky wrote in 1918, but it actually kind of sounds like it could be have been written yesterday. He writes, "Today, in a society whose market embraces the entire world, a society in which the process of constant transformation of industrial and social revolution, it is impossible for a rising class to conduct its class struggle intelligently and successfully by mere resort to plain common sense and to the detail work of practical men. It becomes necessary for every combatant to broaden his horizon through scientific understanding, to grasp the operation of the great social forces in time and space, not in order to abolish work in detail or even to relegate it to the background, but in order to align it with in a definite relation with the social processes as a whole." And I think it was Lenin that led the party that put this vision into practice more than any other. Okay. Now, as I said previously, Lenin saw his conception of the party as totally at one with the orthodoxy of social democracy, as did almost all of the Russian Marxists. He saw the project as trying to build a party along the lines of the German SPD, as a mass workers' party with workers' organisations encompassing millions and all facets of life. But I think history has quite clearly shown us that the Bolsheviks are involved in an entirely different way to the SPD. It is the Bolsheviks that led a successful workers' revolution, while the SPD turned to supporting the First World War and then assisted the German ruling class in crushing the revolution that war had unleashed. So I think the question that comes out of some of the debates that have happened is, why were they so different? I believe that the answer is multifaceted, that there are three main sort of explanations that are generally given on the left, and all are valid and not mutually exclusive. That is that the situation in Russia, that the autocratic nature of the state didn't allow for the development of a reformist bureaucracy within the ranks of the party. Two, that again, sort of the situation in Russia, the 1905 revolution and the insurrectionary movements of the workers meant that the gulf between the fight for reforms and for revolution was not as pronounced as it was in the Western European movements. And finally, obviously, the First World War and Lenin's break with the Second International. So on the first point, I think it's important to recognise that for all the positive example of the German SPD, there was something within the makeup of the party that did allow reformist tendencies to triumph. Part of the reason is that although the party clearly held the allegiance of the mass of class-conscious workers, it had also developed a large bureaucracy whose interests were separated from the working class. This layer of paid functionaries, as well as parliamentarians, trade union bureaucrats, middle-class members, gradually shifted the centre of gravity of the party away from the radical wing to the opportunists. The Bolsheviks, for the simple fact that independent workers' organisations were illegal in Russia, couldn't develop this layer. They did not have a substantial section of the party cater in positions of responsibility in all the institutions of capitalist democracy. So that sort of process of reification and conservatisation didn't occur. So the second factor that I talked about is what the Hungarian Marxist Lukács refers to as the actuality of the revolution. So from the 1890s, the Russian working class was a class in the ascendancy, with increasing strike waves, the development of political demands, and militant action against the state. Then, of course, the 1905 revolution burst onto the scenes. And in all of Lenin's writings, I think it's come through that the connection between the fight for political and economic reforms with the struggle for the development of the working class is just striking. The Bolsheviks were a truly revolutionary party in that they were preparing not only for the gradual development of workers' organisations within existing society, but for the revolution itself. They were a party of struggle, not just of education and piecemeal reform. And Neil Harding, in his biography of Lenin, writes, the Bolshevik section of the Russian SDP had, ever since 1905, been unique among the socialist parties of Europe in that it not only believed in the imminence of revolution and laid great emphasis on the enormous educative role of revolutionary activity in raising the consciousness and developing the organisation of the workers. Its commitment to revolution was even more unique in that it was not simply theoretical but practical. Indeed, after 1914, Lenin is often condemns Coutsey for precisely that. And just one example is he writes, we have any number of Kautsky's promises to be a Marxist sometime in another epoch, not under present conditions, not at this moment. For tomorrow we have Marxism on credit. Marxism as a promise, Marxism deferred. Which brings us nicely to the First World War. And I think that it's in Lenin's theory of imperialism that he begins to locate the material basis for what he called opportunism and social chauvinism, but which I think today we would equate with reformism. Lenin's theory of imperialism had two fundamental ideas that impacted on his theory of the party. The first was that capitalism was ripe for revolution across the world, and this would have an impact on his belief on the imminence and applicability of revolution in 1917 in Russia. The other aspect was the development of a theory to explain the betrayal of the leaders of social democracy. And here we have two interconnected trends. The first was the development of what he called a labour aristocracy, where better-off sections of the working class were paid off with the super profits gained from imperialism so that they in fact maintained a stake in capitalism. And these layers became a way of introducing bourgeois interests and ideas into the workers' movement. Along with this, Lenin developed a theory of the different stages of and periods of capitalist development, and he pointed to the recent decades before 1914 of capitalist growth that allowed for the growth of opportunism and gradualism within the workers' movement. And he writes, "The all-pervading gradualism of the second epoch," by which he means the one of yesterday, "has created an entire opportunist trend based on a definite social stratum within present-day democracy and linked with the bourgeoisie of its own national shade by numerous ties of economic, social and political interests." Thanks. Now, I don't agree with the theory of labour aristocracy, and I don't think that the accuracy of that is a discussion for today. But what it did show was to Lenin was that there was a material basis for opportunism in the workers' movement. And I think this was important because it meant that the struggle against opportunism was not merely an ideological one that could be fought out within the party. Actually, revolutionaries needed to break organisationally with the reformist. And here's Lenin in 1915 in full polemical flight. "It is our duty not only to blame the opportunists, but to ring the tocsin, ruthlessly unmask, overthrow and oust this parasitic stratum from their posts and destroy their unity with the working class movement. Because such unity means, in practice, unity of the proletariat with the national bourgeoisie and a split in the international proletariat, the unity of the lackeys and a split among the revolutionaries." So finally, one of the key fights that Lenin waged within Russian Marxism in the period up to 1914 was that of arguing for the applicability and practicality of replicating the German SPD model, the Vanguard Party, in Russia, even under the autocracy. The experience of the Comintern following the 1917 revolution is that of arguing for the applicability of the Bolshevik model in Western European countries. And I think this period confirms that Lenin saw as fundamental to the Revolutionary Party an organisational break with the reformists. Indeed, as Neil Harding puts it, the Comintern itself was created to deprive the reformist leaders of their organisational base within the workers' movement. In 1918, Lenin wrote, "Bolshevism has become the worldwide theory and tactics of the international proletariat." And it was through the early practice of the Comintern that Lenin drove his view that the revolutionaries must break ideologically and organisationally with the reformists. Okay, so to the question of the talk, it remains, is the theory and practice of the Vanguard Party still relevant to today? Now, my argument in the talk has been that Lenin's prescription for the particular forms and strategies and tactics of the party varied greatly given the context in which they were operating. And I think it would be ludicrous and totally against the spirit of Lenin's methodology to suggest that what is to be done or the Comintern's 21 conditions or any of those things are a blueprint for what we should do 100 years or so later. Of course, the context has changed significantly. For one thing, we saw the defeat of the revolutionary wave after the First World War, including the defeat of the Russian Revolution. From that defeat, the Communist Party's supposed inheritors of Lenin's legacy bastardised his legacy, while the Social Democratic Reformist Parties enjoyed a resurgence in the long boom following the Second World War. Now that long boom is well and truly over, and the reformist parties have for the most part been exposed as the tools of capital they are. But the organised workers' movement and the existence of a clearly defined vanguard within that movement is either nearly moribund or at least in a very weak state. But I don't think any of that actually changes the fact that Lenin's theory and practice in relation to the vanguard party still does have relevance to today. And I think first, and this is an important point, Lenin's optimism about the capacity of the working class to lead a revolution to overthrow capitalism should still be an inspiration to today. And I think, you know, you just need to look at the polarisation of class interests in Tunisia and Egypt to get a sense that the working class in a revolutionary situation strives to represent the interests of all oppressed classes. It is their movement that is at the forefront of leading the struggle for economic justice rather than just the sort of self-limiting political reform that is being advocated by other sections of society. And I think those who want to paint Lenin with an elitist brush should first ask themselves whether they hold in their own hearts the faith that Lenin obviously had that ordinary people could reshape the world. The second point, the necessity to organise the most advanced section of the working class into its own political party, that is the need for a vanguard party, is still current. Now, I don't have time here to go into an argument about the nature of the working class today, and besides, we've actually had several sessions in our conference on that question. I think, though, what remains is that the basic features and dynamics that the theory of the vanguard party rests on are still current. That is, that there is still uneven consciousness, that some workers are more politically advanced than others. And I think if we could organise those people on a mass scale, have thousands of workers arguing progressive ideas and for taking action to challenge the injustices of society, this would have a major impact on the political situation. And I think, indeed, I think we could say that give us an organisation of revolutionaries and while we may not be able to turn Australia around, we could give it a good shake-up. But the political content of these parties and the program around which the vanguard will be organised are just as important as the fact of organisation itself. The other key point in Lenin's theory of the party is the need to combat the reformist sections of the workers' movement organisationally. We need to recognise that reformism has material roots and defeating it is therefore not just an ideological parlour game. The vanguard organisation must be built to provide a revolutionary alternative to the reformists, that is in our sort of context, the Labour parties and the trade union bureaucracies. Finally, the fact that we live in a period where capitalism has revealed its horrors, where war and economic crisis expose the rotten contradictions at the heart of the system, the revolutionary transformation of society should still be on the agenda. There must be a connection between the immediate struggles for reforms and the need to push the argument for socialist transformation. And in places where actual revolutionary struggle is happening, to fight for the extension of the struggle for reforms into an actual fight for socialism. And I think that is the heart of Lenin's project. Now, clearly, we're not in that situation here in Australia today, and I'm not talking in terms of a vanguard party about an organisation like Socialist Alternative because we couldn't pose the question of revolution to the working class, even though we want to. But I think it is something to which we should aspire. And far from the criticisms and caricatures of Lenin's vanguard, that Lenin's vanguard party has suffered, we find in his writings, his actual writings and practice, a guide that is infused with the spirit of human liberation, the greatest respect for the capacities of individuals and the burning desire to extend genuine democracy as far as possible. And that is surely as relevant to today as it ever was. Thanks.